Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Whether you're looking to start a career with no student loans or change careers to land one of the happiest jobs in the world, yep, that's construction, Build Mississippi can help. Visit buildmississippi.com to learn why a career in the trades deserves another look. buildmississippi.com. Your future is waiting.
Listening to the Rebel Report podcast, where it's all Ole Miss all the time. Here's your host, Michael Borky.
Welcome in, everybody, on this Thursday night, a gigantic day for college sports, really, with the settlement, but if you guys want to talk about that, we certainly can. I'm here to tell you, though, it doesn't really change anything. And I'll explain that to you if you want to talk about it. I know it's momentous. I know it's a big deal. But if you're looking for the end of collectives, today was not that day. If you're looking for a salary cap, today was not that day. If you're looking for a restriction on transfers, today also not that day either. All this did was solve one problem among a list of many. That's all that happened today. If you want to talk about it, we can. But it is 100 days right now, 100 days from right now, we will be talking about what we learned from Ole Miss's opening game. And so that's what we're going to start with today. 100 days until Ole Miss football. Hopefully that made your day. 100 days on the nose. Most of you listening to this, though, the overwhelming majority of you listening to this, actually, it'll be 99 for you. So even better, that might make your day as well. But 100 days until Ole Miss football, there's four things that I want to talk about, three things that I'm looking forward to learning about between now and when kickoff happens 100 days from now. Also, not really news. I think we kind of knew this already, but Charlie Weiss Jr.'s contract hit the news again today, and I'm going to defend him, and I will tell you why. If you guys listen to me every day or listen to the radio show, you know where I stand on this already, but I'll bring that back up as well. We will talk about Mike Bianco coming back. Richard, if you listen to the radio show, Richard said yesterday there will be no change. You will be coming back, and then you know it became a news cycle today. So we'll talk about that as well. I've got a couple of thoughts. We already did that on yesterday's episode, so we don't need to expand too much on that, I don't believe, but there are some thoughts to be had there as well. On this edition of the Rebel Report, my name is Michael Borky. I'm really glad that you guys are here. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast if you have not already. Wherever you get them, just search Rebel Report in your favorite podcast app. Subscribe and leave a rating and a review. Also, follow me on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube at Michael Borky, B-O-R-K-E-Y. And the Rebel Report is presented by the Gregory Law Firm. We all know in sports, especially in college sports, or if you're an athlete on the way to your tee time, injuries happen. And sometimes they are unavoidable, but they should not happen to you. At least we hope that they don't. If that does happen to you, if you get personally injured, or you may have a small business or small business issue or contract dispute where you need an attorney, I've got the one for you. DJ Gregory of the Gregory Law Firm, Saltillo, Mississippi. He will discuss all of your legal options. He's the best in the business at it. DJ Gregory has got you covered. Remember this number, 662-397-9799. Don't delay. Call DJ today, 662-397-9799. 9799 DJ Gregory of the Gregory Law Firm for all your personal injury, small business, and contract disputes. Presenting the Rebel Report. So 100 days until the start of Ole Miss football, 93 days until the start of college football. You've got the week zero games, and then there's that big Thursday night, handful of really high profile games, and also Colorado is playing North Dakota State. That's a late kickoff on that Thursday night, and the Buffs can do the funniest thing in the world. So before training camp happens, there are a few things that I want to know that I'm looking to learn before August comes around, before training camp begins, before the season begins. Ole Miss obviously kicking off against Furman. That is not going to be a game that we're going to analyze deeply. I am hoping to have their head coach, Clay Hendricks, on the show. I've already reached out and hope that that can be done. He's actually he's a great coach. They made a playoff run last year. Furman's back to being a consistent winner at the FCS level. That they were kind of a powerhouse there. You know, when I was growing up, frankly, they were making repeated playoff appearances, made a run to the championship, fell off a little bit. Bobby Johnson, who coached at Vanderbilt, coached at Furman as well, but they fell off a little bit. He's got them back in the FCS relevancy. Interesting guy, too. Interesting offense. They run that Air Force kind of spread option. That's where he came from before he took the head job at Furman. So hoping to talk to him about, you know, how do you prepare for a game like this? What do you see in Ole Miss? And to pick his brain about the game. Usually the FCS schools are really accommodating for stuff like that. And hopefully my roots will also make sure that that gets done. So I'm looking forward to that opportunity. Aside from that, though, we're not going to be doing much previewing of that game for obvious reasons. Frankly, we're not going to be doing much post-game reaction to that, quite frankly. But in the time between now and when training camp begins, I want to know more about health. We're going to get the opportunity to talk to Jackson Dart at SEC Media Days. We'll ask him point blank, how are you? Had an off-season procedure. Is that coming along? How do you feel physically? Stuff like that. But it's not just him. And again, Jackson Dart participated in spring, so obviously that answer appears to be going fine. But two high-profile transfers for Ole Miss are recovering from injuries and procedures. Princely Umanmielen and Juice Wells. I saw that there was, I think, an Instagram post recently that had Juice Wells out of the walking boot. And so that's obviously a good sign, especially, you know, with 100 days until the first game. And that first game is not one that you really need Juice Wells for, but good sign, plenty of time to get himself back into game shape. And that was good to see, but curious about Juice Wells' health despite that good update. And Princely Umanmielen, he had that labrum surgery, I believe is what happened, had a procedure on his shoulder. How is he progressing? Is he going to be available for the start of the season? I don't know if we're going to truly learn that or not. You guys know what Lane Kiffin is like when it comes to injuries. I mean, the guy could have his leg amputated, and Lane would say, yeah, we hope to have him on Saturday. But at least for Dart, we will be able to talk to him directly at SEC Media Days. Lane Kiffin will be asked about the other two as well. Maybe we'll get some inside information between now and then, especially when it comes to, like, you know, Instagram or Twitter posts from players showing that they are progressing. But those three guys and their health is something that, you know, we need to know about between now and the start of the season. If Princely and Juice are not ready when the season begins, it should raise your eyebrows a little bit, as we talked about before, and we'll talk about 100 times between now and the start of the season. The early schedule for Ole Miss sets up quite nicely for them to kind of ease those guys back in to form, as opposed to like playing Georgia in week two or something like that. But injury health for those three guys in particular is something that I would like to learn about. Number two, we know Deion Smith is making his way to Oxford. What I'm curious about is what kind of impact do they actually expect him to have? I know that everybody talks about Deion Smith and how he's this first-round pick caliber talent guy and stuff like that. And, you know, maybe he is. Enough people say that to where you shouldn't question it. But he has not done it yet. At this level, he just simply has not done it yet at this level with any amount of consistency. And you've already got, if Wells is healthy, three established, consistent, proven wide receivers at this level when they are healthy. So he's showing up to campus, but what do they expect out of him in 2024? And most especially since academics have been a major issue. If Ole Miss is going to make a playoff run, that's going to start after the semester ends. I mean, I hate to be this blunt, but it's a fair question. they going to be able to keep him eligible for the playoff run? Is that a thing that's going to happen? Because they will play in the playoffs if they make it after the semester ends. Are they going to be able to overcome? And I know what you're thinking. There's no way that a player shouldn't be ineligible that time of year. Spencer Sanders, at the end of this past season, was not eligible for the Peach Bowl. It has happened before, despite them having all of the resources in front of them to make sure that they never fail or miss a class. Somehow, some way, there are people that are so unmotivated academically that can be ineligible despite being on an SEC football team where basically all of the work is done for you. So there is precedent for losing your eligibility academically. And so are they going to be able to get him to show up? And that's all you have to do in college is just show up to actually have an impact when it matters most. That's a fair thing to question. And yeah, I mean, he's showing up. That's a good sign. But what's his role actually going to be? I'm curious to hear what the answers on that are. And then chemistry. Speaking of SEC media days, Lane Kiffin stood on the podium going into last season talking about how they did not do a good enough job of team chemistry building. They didn't manage adversity well. He took some blame for that, but he said it was kind of a program-wide thing. Clearly, they figured something out for last year's team. But was it like a secret formula is probably not the right expression, but was it something that they can replicate? Are they having chemistry issues? Because despite having as much returning production and experience and leadership that they have, they're still bringing in four new offensive linemen, basically an entire new running back room, a new starting wide receiver, at least two starters on the defensive line, new starter at linebacker, multiple new starters in the defensive secondary. Yes, they have a ton of returning guys in an established culture, but there's also new faces. Do you sense, like you did a year ago, improved chemistry? Or is it like 2 years ago where you were worried about when adversity would hit, what would happen? 2 years ago, the team folded. Last year, they faced adversity head on and overcame it. What's your feeling about this team this year? That's something that we will certainly ask Lane about in Dallas this year is where it is. And I'm curious to hear his answer because he was really blunt about it last year. Curious to hear what he's got to say about it this year. The fourth thing, football-wise, that I've got for you is Charlie Weiss Jr.'s contract. That is something that the Twitter sphere absolutely cannot stand. For whatever reason, and I've talked about this with you before, but it truly blows my mind how the narrative around Charlie Weiss Jr. has become what it is. Frankly, not that you should feel bad for a millionaire, because that's what he is. He's I think the highest paid OC in the SEC and one of the highest paid assistants in the country. Pete Golding is one of the highest paid assistants in the country as well. Ole Miss is investing in football in ways they never have before. But it's amazing when the offense is good, how that's all Lane Kiffin. It's all Kiffin. And when the offense is bad, Charlie Weiss is a bum. I almost feel bad for the guy, but his salary makes me not. But I almost feel bad for the guy. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. It makes no sense at all to blame one when it's bad and to credit the other when it's good. It's entirely unfair. It's frankly nonsensical. Lane Kiffin has a headset on and a play sheet in his hand. He has veto power of every single play call that goes through the headset onto the field. Every single one. He either stops it or endorses it. And so if you're going to give credit to the offense when it's good, both of them deserve it, because Charlie Weiss Jr. is calling plays and he is scheming and all of that. And obviously so is Kiffin, because you see how that dynamic operates. You can see it on the sidelines. What the play call distribution is, I don't know. But I do know that the head coach, the offensive-minded head coach, with a play sheet and a headset, has 100% veto power of every single call that goes through. So again, he's either endorsing it or he's stopping it, and there's no in between. So when the offense is bad and you're only pointing at Weiss, that's illogical. It's kind of silly, frankly. Praise them both when it's good, blame them both when it's bad. Is he overpaid? Possibly. But in the last thing, it's like what Alabama fans did with Pete Golding. Alabama fans would try to tell you that Pete Golding sucked, right? They were in my mentions all last year because they're a bunch the people that were in my mentions, not the fan base at large, but the people that tried to convince you that Pete Golding sucked are the same people that think that Nick Saban's a god. Well, if Nick Saban is a god that knows all about football, why was he keeping somebody on staff for as long as he kept Pete Golding on staff if he sucked? The greatest college football coach of all time kept Pete Golding on his staff for years and didn't fire him. He took the Ole Miss job for a lot of reasons that you guys know already. He was not fired. Nick Saban himself said he wanted to keep Pete. So the greatest college football coach of all time doesn't know defense? Is that what you're saying to me? Same thing here. One of the most brilliant offensive minds in the game is keeping and highly paying an offensive coordinator that sucks on his staff? You're telling me that Lane Kiffin doesn't know what a good coordinator is or is not? It's kind of goofy, right? So, again, it's probably an overpay, but it just reminded me of that a bit ridiculous of I'm being kind of hard on people, I guess, but don't blame Weiss when it's bad and praise Kiffin when it's good. Both deserve credit and blame. They're both heavily involved. The Rebel Report is brought to you by Advantage Business Systems. Check them out online, absms.com. That's the website. If your Mississippi business is in the market for office technology, anything from copiers and printers and mail machines to cloud storage, data security, IT projects, phone systems, whatever it is, Mississippi office technology, Advantage Business Systems has you covered. ABSMS.com is the website. Tell them I sent you. You'll get a complimentary office technology assessment. So you tell them what you need, what your budget is, and they will find a solution for you on me, Advantage Business Systems, ABSMS.com. The podcast is also brought to you by Priority One Bank. Let them make you their priority. We've got 16 locations here in Mississippi, so there's likely one in your backyard. Bank with me at Priority One Bank because every day they make you their priority. Also, a quick PSA, if you are in the Corinth area, the Rebel Road Trip is making their way to the Crossroads Arena on June 13th, 6 o'clock, June 13th. So when you're driving on that Thursday night to Corinth, to Crossroads Arena, you can have us on the radio show on your way there and then hop out and go see Lane Kiffin, Keith Carter. You guys know what the Rebel Road Trip is, but check it out. Corinth, June 13th. If you're in the area, go see it. It's a lot of fun. Schools should do a lot more stuff like that for fans, but it actually is a pretty cool event. They do a really good job. So if you're in the area, make sure that you go and check that out. So anyway, let's get to your comments. Right now, 100 days until football, and that's probably not what the chat will be about tonight. Probably not, but I just did the Bianco thing yesterday morning, and then we did the Bianco thing on the radio show yesterday, and then we did it again today, and then we'll do it tomorrow. And so I kind of wanted to break up the monotony of it, I guess. So talking football tonight, I assume. Hope that gave you a little bit of something, kind of surface level, but hope you enjoyed it. Probably talking women's rifle. They beat the military academies too much. Like, don't get me wrong. It's great that Ole Miss has athletes that achieve at a high level and the rifle team achieves often at a high level. But should we really, like, be excited about the Ole Miss rifle team beating the service academies? I mean, shouldn't that be deeply concerning? They're better at shooting guns than the military. Good to see you, Chris. The settlement is one step in many toward revenue sharing. Yeah, it is revenue sharing is what the settlement is. What I was saying on Twitter, and what I'll say right here again to you guys, is the settlement's not going to change anything. And here's what I mean by that. It's going to change budgets. The $30 million a year over 10 years number is not accurate. It's going to be, from talking to somebody with direct knowledge of it, Ole Miss and other programs, you know, everybody else expects it to be around $20 million, $17 to $22 million, somewhere in there. There's a handful of things that you can do that will reduce that cost. There's some accounting things that they can do with, what is it, the Alston money, and then when they bring baseball to full scholarships, what that cost gets deducted from. It's not $30 million a year over 10 years. It's not $300 million over 10 years. It'll be less than that. It's still a significant amount of money, a lot of money. But it's not $30 million over 10 years. It's not $300 million. It's less than that, but it's still a lot. What this settlement does not do is collectively bargain. And what this settlement does not do is do anything with the transfer portal. You guys know my thoughts on collective bargaining by now. We've talked through it. Quick summary. Until they collectively bargain with the athletes, there cannot be a salary cap. There cannot be a earning cap. You can cap the amount of money that the schools can give the players, but you cannot cap their earning potential. So NIL will still be a thing after this settlement. It might be harder to fund collectives. Maybe that becomes a thing because these athletic departments are going to have to find a way to make up for those losses. They're going to raise ticket prices and seek different revenue channels and stuff like that. They're also going to make cuts. Some of the smaller departments might lose sports even, which is very sad. There's going to be some fat trimming when it comes to the bloated spending that you see in college sports. It's not going to be as gaudy and ridiculous for programs that lose millions of dollars a year. So you're going to see some cuts in some places and things like that. But you cannot cap the earning potential of a non-employee. And this settlement does not make them employees. All it does is share in their revenue. It's just step number one. Now, I think they're working on the next few steps. I don't think that they're done here, but this does not allow for them to have a salary cap because the players have no say in how much they're getting. That's how the NFL can have a salary cap, and that's how the NBA can have a salary cap, and so on, because the players have a seat at that table, and they agree collectively to share in a certain amount of revenue. The players give up some things, and the owners give up some things too. Owners cannot pay players outside of the salary cap money. If they get caught doing that, they lose their teams. There's heavily regulated and enforceable rules with professional sports. Yes, they can get endorsements, but they can't get it from stakeholders. It has to be true endorsements. You can't do that in college yet, because the players have not had a say in how much they earn. So NIL collectives are still going to be a thing. I think they're going to tackle that at some point, but until they collectively bargain, there can be no earning cap. And until they collectively bargain, you cannot restrict the transfer portal and individual player movement. This does not take care of those things. This just takes care of part of the antitrust issue. It's a mess. There's a lot more of this to go. This is not final in any way. This is not final. They've got a lot more work to do. This only solves part of the problem. What I'm concerned about is sports getting cut. That's my fear. Opportunities being taken away from people. I'm also afraid of the discourse and beyond that can be created if Title IX is still a factor here and the money has to be divided equally, because forgive the callousness of it, it's just stupid for that to be the case. The quarterback is more valuable than the second baseman on the softball team. The quarterback is more valuable than every other athlete on campus, men or women. But if you're going to treat them all the same and have the same number of or the same amount of money going to the same number of male athletes as female athletes, it's just kicking the can down the road, and there will be more of this in different ways. You can't treat them the same. They're not the same. And that's okay to say. So you've got that coming down the pipe as well. It's a mess. And then you see the Notre Dame athletic director, you know, begging for Congress's help still, as if those group of incompetent fools are going to do what's best for college sports without inserting their agenda in one way or another, or giving us unintended consequences, as if we don't already have enough of those in college sports. But there's a way that they can get themselves out of this. They're choosing not to do it, and they're still choosing to beg Congress for help. And it's embarrassing is what it is. It's frankly, it's just embarrassing that we're still asking Congress for help. Anything's better than talking baseball. Yeah. Love the show. Southern Miss and State playing late or helping get through this night shifts in Germany. Yeah. I've got to get done here and watch that State game. So Haydad and I can talk about it tomorrow on the show. This is the first step towards the creation of a new college football league independent of the NCAA and other college sports. Not yet, though. So what this settlement has done, it's tied all of the conferences to the NCAA for a period of time. This married them for a period of time, about a decade. You know, I had somebody tell me earlier today that they think that it'll last for about 7 years before things start getting squirrely again. But this does tie everybody together for a while because they all agreed together for the lawsuit and the payments moving forward, that they agreed to that. So this does actually marry these sides together for at least a period of time. When do I think Title IX will be abolished in college sports? That's a great question. When the day comes, and this day is coming, when they deem all athletes employees, which is not something that they should do. It's not something that they should do. They should deem the athletes of the money sports employees, collectively bargain with them, and then treat everything else like college sports. That's what they should do. They're not going to do it, but that's what they should do. As popular as women's basketball was this year, thanks a lot to Caitlin Clark, the sport is growing in popularity aside from her, but you're going to see a regression back to the mean now that she's gone. You are. It's a money loser. It's what it is. It's a money loser. But that doesn't mean that it should cease to exist, because it shouldn't cease to exist. Thousands of young women get incredible opportunities thanks to basketball. Thousands of young men get great opportunities thanks to baseball. Sports that lose millions. Golf, tennis, softball, baseball, swimming and diving. All of these sports that are money losers, they still have great value for the schools. But if you treat every athlete like an employee, I'm just going to cut them all. Why on earth would Ole Miss want to keep a sport that's losing millions of dollars around when they're all employees, when there's no standard in which to provide academic scholarships and have to have this sport exist? That's how it would go away if they don't collectively bargain. That would be the worst thing for college sports. That is the worst thing that can happen, is making them all employees. That would be the worst thing, because then they would get treated like employees. And if your department loses millions of dollars a year, you going to stick around? If Sports Talk Mississippi started losing a bunch of money, millions a year, if not only did we not have great sales, we had negative sales, we didn't have any, and the only thing that Super Talk got out of us was our salaries that they had to pay us and nothing more. Show's done. Show's done. Hope that doesn't happen. Money sports, negotiate. Make them employees. Bargain. If you do it with everybody, it's game over. You put the NCAA in the same realm of your hatred as the IRS and ATM. You know, it's hard to disagree. Saw Deion Smith is coming to campus on June 1st. How much does he add to the wide receiver room? So I am way behind on messages. We'll see. I know that the talent is there, and that's why they've worked so hard to get him there. But I need to see it first. I know that that's not a popular thing, but I need to see it first. By the way, keeping Bianco was the right move, mainly for the money reason. Too many people assumed Tuesday was his last game. I think, quite frankly, and again, I could be wrong, I don't know. I think that money, and this is counter to what Richard said yesterday when he was talking about, hey, there's not going to be a change, and there's two reasons why. One, track record, championship 2 years ago, built the program, et cetera, et cetera. But then also he talked about the money component and this settlement coming down the pipe and things like that. I think it's almost exclusively about money. I think if the buyout was not cost prohibitive, there'd be a change. I don't know that. He would know more about this than me, considering, you know, where he is and what he does. But I think that if money wasn't a factor, we'd be talking about a coaching search right now. That is what I think. And what can't happen, and I know it's been reported already that there's going to be a staff addition or some staff movement of some kind. You can't just run it back. Frankly, I don't think you can run it back with anyway. Most people went to, oh, they're going to hire a pitching coach. I understand why a lot of people want that. But I also know that Mike Bianco has done a good job with pitchers in the past. To me, hitting is more dire. And whatever the hell happened in the field is more dire than pitching. Now, I think it all needs to be changed, frankly. I think it all needs to be changed. That's just my opinion. I don't think that they should run it back with anybody. Maybe recruiting. I know that, but they should make wholesale changes. Ole Miss baseball has been 24 months of embarrassment. They were embarrassing in the field. They pitched it terribly. They were awful with runners on base and runners in scoring position. Didn't have a batter over 300. Just one new staff member is not adequate, because if they get a pitching coach and that's all they do, that's fine. But what are you going to do about the plate? How can anybody expect that's going to be better after what you've seen? What are you going to do about the field? I think there needs to be sweeping changes. But we'll see what they do. I think it was purely a financial decision. As much as I hated the past two seasons, I think keeping Bianco is a good choice. $10 million plus is just too much money for a buyout with a sport that makes little to no money. Deion Smith already makes an already elite wide receiver room deadly for opposing defenses. There's really nothing more delicious than Notre Dame begging Congress to do something to help them. Isn't that pathetic? Man, it really is. Just why on earth do people in those positions think that Congress is going to do right by them? That's what I can't wrap my mind around. And Greg Sankey has been asked that question, and he kind of gave a workaround answer. But why? What about what they do in their day jobs, you know, trying to run the country and failing miserably, makes you think that they're going to do right by college sports when they can't do right by literally anything? They are the worst of us. Our politicians are the worst we have to offer. Really are. They're going to get college sports right. I just don't buy it. Really think Ole Miss football season doesn't get real until the Kentucky game? Yeah, it's not real until the Kentucky game. I mean, Wake Forest will be noteworthy, right? It's on the road. It's a Power 5 team, but yeah. you mentioned that that Bianco has had the opportunity to make new NIL opportunities similar to what Beard did, but chooses not to. Is that something you're able, you're comfortable expanding on? It's not anything bad. I'll spin it this way. If you want to spin, Chris Beard is extremely active raising NIL money for basketball. He's talking to boosters, both extremely wealthy and not extremely wealthy. He's fundraising. He's asking for money often. That is not the same phenomenon in baseball. They could do a lot more engagement with boosters than they do for baseball NIL. I don't think it's anything bad. I think they could do a lot better of a job at program facing out, raising money for NIL the way that Chris Beard has. And again, football sells itself. Based solely on talent, rank these three wide receivers, Trey Harris, Deion Smith, Chris Marshall. That's a great question. So I'm going to answer it with a cop-out because I think talent requires head strength. That's part of it, right? Just physical ability. I think in order to be, it's kind of a dumb answer. Some people will roll their eyes at this, but Trey Harris is the most talented among those three because he's smart. He's capable. He's available. And that matters. So Harris, Smith, Marshall would be my order. Because Harris is he's got the head strength also to pair with his physical ability. I know that's kind of dumb, but the best ability is availability. I know that's a cheesy thing that high school football coaches say, but that matters to me. Are you there? Trey Harris is there. And also he is the best one-on-one coverage receiver in college football coming back. So can't watch the stream tonight, but you just graduated high school. Congrats, man. Awesome. Congratulations. Enjoy yourself. Appreciate you leaving a comment. If you wrote that while sitting in your cap and gown, that'd be awesome. That's cool. You're getting to talk to the Furman coach. I hope it works out. He's a really, really interesting guy. Offense is a lot of fun to watch. So Bianco coming back is 100% due to the NCAA settlement we had to sign off on today. I'd look for coaches' salaries to stop their meteoric rise for about 5 to 10 years. And I think you're going to see a reduction in the other sports as well. You're going to start seeing kind of like what Ole Miss did with replacing Matt Mott in soccer. I think you're going to see more of that. There has not been an announcement on baseball assistants as of yet. Question you have about Ole Miss baseball, not just the Bianco factor, but are other programs like Tennessee passing or equalizing to Ole Miss in baseball going to take them down a peg? That is certainly something that, frankly, you should be concerned about. The rest of the league is investing. Tennessee's investing. They just they finished an outfield project. They're doing more to their stadium. Auburn's expanding and doing more and investing. Kentucky just built a new stadium, and now look at what they're doing. Everybody in the league. There is only one program in the SEC. You've just added Oklahoma and Texas, and they care about baseball, but there's only one that's truly not invested in baseball. That's it. Everybody else is in now. Look at Georgia, man. I mean, even Georgia's given a damn, at least somewhat, in baseball now. Everybody's trying. And Ole Miss can still keep their heads above those programs that they've had their heads above. But everybody else is investing now, and everybody else is trying now. It's a different landscape than it used to be. Just watch the highlights from the Penn State game again. That was an offensive clinic, man. I mean, truly, I don't know if I'm ready to Was that the best game that Lane Kiffin has ever called? And Charlie Weiss Jr., because I just said you got to give him credit too. But was that the best offensive game that a Lane Kiffin coached team has had? And here's why I say it like that, because that Penn State, they've had better offensive outputs against bad teams or lesser teams. But that was a top 10 Penn State team with an elite level defense in the Peach Bowl behind an offensive line that couldn't block a high school. I mean, that game was schemed and called beautifully and executed, obviously, beautifully. Because that's an elite Penn State defense that they lit up that way. Title IX isn't going anywhere, but you think college football will break away into its own league to avoid the revenue sharing between sports that Title IX mandates. That would work. I think. I mean, I don't know what legal repercussions they could face, but that's more creative and forward thinking than please, please, Cory Booker, save me. You think Spencer Sanders just took his paycheck and said, screw it, as far as classes go, knowing he wasn't going to be the starter? Yeah, but what happens if Jackson Dart gets hurt in the Egg Bowl? He did get hurt in the Egg Bowl. That's what makes that so stupid. And I'm allowed to say that because he was a professional football player. He wasn't a college kid. He was an adult grown man that made a decision to not be academically eligible. What if Jackson Dart does get seriously injured in the Egg Bowl instead of just knocked out for a second? You, a guy that has 4 years of starting film on tape, could have played with weeks to prepare in the Peach Bowl and gotten some exposure, proven that you were a good soldier despite not winning a job, showed some things to the NFL. But instead, if Jackson Dart gets hurt in that Egg Bowl and Spencer Sanders is not eligible, you're telling everybody, I'm an idiot. That's what happened already, but it would have been magnified even more had the opportunity to play would have been there and he couldn't just do the basics to be able to play in that. I mean, it's not like he doesn't have an NFL future anyway, but if you wanted one, that's a good way to make sure you don't have one. Tennessee's been borderline elite since 2019, and they never cared about baseball beforehand. Now Kentucky's rolling. Ole Miss baseball is irrelevant. Yes, the assistants are the same. Pretty sure Charlie Weiss Jr. is a sneaky offensive genius, but sits behind a widely known offensive genius. He's a scapegoat. That's what he is. A break off of the money sports is something to consider with Title IX and revenue sharing discussions. Absolutely. Paying the starting quarterback and the backup shortstop for softball equally will not be an option. They better hope they figure that out, because I think that's more likely than a CBA. You wonder how Zach Arnett could add to the staff, sharing some details on how he slowed Kiffin's defense down could potentially make it harder to defend. Absolutely. I mean, as we talked about, I think when it happened, you had State fans that were like, ooh, he sucks. Like, why would they hire him? He sucks. Like, first of all, no, he doesn't. Didn't navigate Mike Leach's tragic passing as a head coach particularly well, but he's a really good defensive mind. His defenses shut Lane Kiffin's offenses down. The self-scouting that they're going to be able to do with Arnett is worth the price alone. Oh, gosh, could I break down what all Ole Miss baseball needs to add through the portal this offseason to make the Super Regional next year? A starting pitcher. I think that, Fisher's back. Luke Hill's back, although he's got to be a hell of a lot better defensively. Austin Simmons said he was going to be back. We'll see. I mean, they need multiple position players, multiple bats, maybe a defensive catcher, a starting pitcher, at least one. couple boys. I mean, it's – man, I've got to see who all they've got coming back first before I can tell you what they need. Because, like, Furness is back. That helps. I think Luke Hill's back. That helps. Fisher's back. That helps. What are they going to do at catcher? Will Smithwick improve there? Do they slap him into the outfield? I'll have to see who all comes back before we talk about that, I think. Rebel Road Trip open mic could be a little uncomfortable for Keith with the Bianco situation. Yeah. Rumor is the Swayze $30 million expansion is on hold. Yes, it is, and it should be. Do we expect the new on-field assistant to be a pitching coach? Not necessarily. Now, that's seemingly the most popular thought, but it may not necessarily be a pitching coach. There could be a change with hitting coach as well. Could be. I don't know. I have just the initial names I heard, not every single one was a pitching coach for who they could add. But I could be wrong. Congress already gets special access to the stock market, so why not let them into collegiate money too? No doubt. If Super Talk ever ends, get into curtain rod sales. Now, I'll just drive DoorDash and then stream on YouTube every day. That's probably what I would do. Do I think Ole Miss will host game day? If so, which game? Georgia. Absolutely Georgia. They'll host college game day for Georgia. Do I think the employee thing could vary from different schools or states? Would it be a uniform thing, like would Stanford or Cal destroy their sports doing it while Ole Miss doesn't? I don't think it should be done through state laws, although it's possible that it is. Some politicians that don't know what's good for them could possibly force a law like that. It needs to be done by the conferences. They need to get together and do it together. Now, that takes some forward thinking and some leadership, but that's how that needs to go. The conferences need to get together and decide, hey, this isn't going to work. It isn't sustainable. Let's bite the bullet, collectively bargain with the money sports, break away. We can still sell the media. Like they can still operate as is, just not under the NCAA's umbrella anymore, and let's do it all together. It's complicated. It's much easier said than done, but that would be it. Considering this would be the second year without an extension, how many years does Bianco's contract have left? I believe 4. It was a 6-year contract. Pitching coach doesn't fix everything that's wrong with baseball. They're god-awful at every single position in all 3 phases of the game. Yep. Pitching gets most of the attention, but the hitting has been the worst in the SEC 2 years in a row. And that's why I said I think the hitting coach is more dire. Absolutely. Bianco needs to just hire Kiffin as his recruiting and portal director. That's the thing, though. They didn't portal terribly. Missed on one pitcher. Maybe 2. But Doyle was a good pickup, obviously. Fisher was a good pickup. Luke Hill was a defensive liability and started the season off with a bang with the I was hacked thing and was terrible at the plate, but he got better as the year went on. Still kind of a defensive liability, but certainly got better at the plate. That was a portal hit. It wasn't a miss anyway. They did okay there. They just don't have any homegrown guys. The bar for Mike to keep his job next year, they absolutely have to make the tournament. I've heard that it's like if they make the tournament and go 2-Q, that's not enough to save a job. Does the NCAA ruling make the possibility of Kiffin leaving Ole Miss higher since facility upgrades are going to be harder? If he leaves Ole Miss, it will have nothing to do with facilities. It's all about can you get players. Facilities don't get players anymore. They simply do not get play. It doesn't matter. It's money. It's all about money. This ruling today doesn't level the playing field. So collectives still matter, as I understand it. NIL will still be a thing. Collectives will still matter. So it's whether or not that can continue to be what it is today. Everything else is fine. Lawsuits aside, why should Congress even be involved in college sports? I pay you to run a country, not argue with colleagues. Well, they shouldn't be involved in anything, those incompetent fools, but that's a conversation for a different day. ...2020 Alabama was an amazingly called game. That one was for sure against a Golding defense too. 2021 Arkansas, 23 A&M were good too. 2020 Alabama was a really good one. I think this Penn State team was a lot better than Arkansas and 23 A&M. They had Penn State's defense absolutely pegged, dead to rights. They were very good, but their heads and eyes were spinning with the misdirection Lane and Weiss are so good at. And you saw what Priestcorn can be when healthy. 23 A&M was the single best performance of Jackson Dart, in your opinion. Tulane also shouldn't go unnoticed. He played really tough behind a terrible line. And he was so accurate against Texas A&M. Just the accuracy and the timing of his throws that day were really good. State hasn't been able to consistently score in any Egg Bowl against Kiffin. Arnett had some secret sauce that kept him in the games and won them the 22-1, absolutely. Furnace at first was working. Yes, it was. Absolutely. Yeah, Ross was a miss too. But I think it's more about, I think when Parham says it, he's right. It's more about homegrown than portal where they screwed up. Dart's touchdown to Trigg against Tulane might be your favorite play. I agree. Good to see you, Jeffrey, for Macon, South Carolina. Appreciate you being here, my friend. Appreciate you. Good to see you too, Jerry. Glad to see all of you guys. I've got to hang it up and finish the state game. So I appreciate you guys. Hopefully some of the, again, surface-level football stuff at least kept you a little bit entertained. We talked a lot about Bianco yesterday. We'll do it on the radio show some tomorrow as well. It's just, it is what it is. I think the money was quitter. Yeah, a little bit, Barbara. But I think the money was just too much, and that's ultimately what happened here. But anyway, appreciate you guys. Love you to death. I'll see you. Today's Thursday, so I will see you on Sunday. We'll start a little bit earlier. It'll be 7:30 probably on the nose on Sunday. Just depends on, you know, if we can get everything that we need to get done that day. And anyway, so we'll see you Sunday. Y'all have a great weekend.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Mid-Delta Auction Company is holding a spring equipment auction Thursday, March the 20th from their location across from Cannon Motors in Greenwood. Visit mdauction.com for more information. That's mdauction.com. We'll see you there.